First speaker is Leanne Bowler, and she's faculty at Pittsburgh School of Information Sciences. So let's welcome her. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for coming. I'm happy that it's a small group, actually, so that I can maybe talk to you a little bit. But it saddens me that there's so few people who are interested in youth. That makes me a bit sad. But, okay. I'm just starting early. I'm from the School of Information Sciences at Pittsburgh. I'm an assistant professor there. And I actually teach in the library science stream, but we do cross-disciplinary kind of research with information sciences and archivists and all that stuff. And this presentation is listed as a practice, but it actually is kind of a first step in a research program. But, you know, it's kind of a qualitative case study that I really did to inform myself. Down the road, I hope to be working with teens in user studies and actually getting them to help work together in intergenerational design teams to design health web portals. That's my research background. Is intergenerational design with children on the web. And that's what I've been doing for the past 5 years, basically in the area of education. And now I'm kind of stepping into the health arena, and it's not completely, you're wondering how does, I was a librarian for many years. I'm now kind of a professor in library science. And so how do I get into health? I was also a librarian in clinical settings at the Montreal General Hospital and at the Montreal Neurological Hospital in the Patient Resource Center. And I did work with quite a few teens, older teens, especially at the neuro where, you know, all the really hard cases head over from the children's over to the neuro. So, you know, I'm really fascinated with young people's access to health information. So, but the problem for me and everybody, teens, is that teens use the web to find health information. This is absolutely no surprise, but it's now supported by research evidence that the web is young people's preference for information. It's their preferential source, and that goes for health information. And what also from the research evidence, we know that while teens are likely to turn to the web for health information, research has indicated that their skills in locating, evaluating, and using health information are very weak. And actually, you would think in the 21st century, and teens today have lived with technology most of their lives, you would think they would be far more adept at searching and finding information, but that's actually not the case. There was a very interesting meta-analysis that was released last winter. It's posted on the web from the Center for Information Behavior over at University College in London. And they looked at all the research on how young people look for information going back since we've started to look at that, which is 20, 30 years. And in effect, they're just as bad as they always were. What they do, most teens will just hop onto Google to find their information. And this information is obviously unreliable and basically hard to find. This behavior suggests that a more targeted approach to help finding health information is required and one that might be offered by a web portal. This might be useful for teens. And whether they'd find that web portal, I'll get to that. I just wanted to talk briefly about what is a web portal. There's lots of fluid language in this area. We talk about websites, web pages, web portals, and we even talk digital libraries. And for me, I'm working with a concept of a digital library and the portal as kind of like the gateway to it. And a digital library is a space on the web where you'll find an organized collection of information. Organized is critical. And you'll find that a lot of that information is actually proprietary to the site created by the site, or if it's like an archives, it's been scanned by the site and they own, you know. But a digital library also includes services and tools. So, all these pictures. So I'm working with that concept, and I just want to make that clear because I'm not looking at individual web pages. And although the border between a site and a portal is kind of, you know, it's unclear sometimes, I'm really pushing towards the digital library end of it. Okay, so I did an environmental scan of the web. Did not involve users in this, it was just me. As I said, this is my first step into user studies with teens. And I thought, well, first, before I go out and ask teens to tell me about health information, I better find out for myself what exists. And then actually characterize it. What kind of user experiences do these portals enable? So those are kind of the research questions for this. I call it a little study. And I'm from the perspective of information science. Okay, in information science, we're looking at information behavior. And generally, I mean, it must happen in some studies, but generally we don't look at health outcomes related to looking at a health web portal or health information. Because you can imagine, it's our focus of interest is the information, its contents, its structures, and how people, you know, interface with it. Okay, so important to define the scope. First of all, I said teens, and what is a teen? Okay, for my purposes, I said, okay, I'll look at anything that is for adolescent, and I'm saying 12, could be 11, but in my purposes, I said age 12 to 18. And on the topic of general health web portals, I did not look at web portals on specific diseases and conditions. I mean, you can imagine the web is huge, so I really needed to narrow my parameters here. I looked at the language English and French health information from Canada, United States, and the UK, and I think I did look at some from New Zealand and Australia. And French, I looked at Canada and France. Okay. And I followed a kind of a methodology. I'm repeating a methodology used in earlier studies that I did with McGill University. When I was a doctoral student, I worked on a quite a big project for designing web portals for kids in the area of history. And in that study, we went out and identified over 2,300 Canadian history sites for kids. Huge. And so I basically followed that methodology because you have to be fairly systematic. You know, basically going out searching Google, search engines like Google, MSN, search directories like Yahoo, Yahooligans. I looked under general and specific. I did look at specific things like cancer, epilepsy, and some topics like piercing and you know, that kind of thing. In French, I searched under Télévision and Toile du Québec. And I looked in digital libraries, the Internet Public Library, the Teen Space. And the other method to use when you're trying to do an environmental scan is to look at what links from other portals. Okay, so I looked at links from children's hospitals in Canada and United States, their portals, adolescent clinics in Canada and United States, public libraries in Canada and United States. Only four of the libraries in Canada's major cities had health information for teens, by the way. And there was very little from the Canadian pediatric hospitals. And then my part two is basically to evaluate it. And I had a framework, included usability, interactivity, reliability, and findability. And I'm going to run through this quickly. I don't know what my time is here. Okay. So usability and interactivity do overlap, but in my mind, I separated them. Usability refers to interface design and is a term that incorporates concepts of navigation, layout and design, clarity of concept, purpose, underlying architecture, insight assistance, and for web content, we talk about readability, if it's web content with text. Okay? And the definition from ISO, ESO standards, is the usability of an interface is a measure of the effectiveness, efficiency, and satisfaction with which specified users can achieve specific goals in a particular environment with that interface. Okay. Interactivity relates to the type of interactions and level of engagement between, one, the user and the system, and two, Web 2.0, users and users. Okay? And it's basically, I'm looking at it as kind of the relationship between the user and the system and the user and users that are using the system. And I'm also interested in how this interactivity relates to learning. I'm thinking of, is a web portal a learning environment, and does it have tools to help people synthesize all this, these little pieces of information into one kind of bucket that makes sense for them? Is it a knowledge-building experience? So that's why I'm looking at interactivity. Reliability is the traditional librarian point of view, also medical, traditional values of accuracy, currency, credibility, bias. And in the web-based world, we have to talk about durability. Is it going to disappear tomorrow? Okay, and then finally, findability is simply the ease with which a portal can be discovered. It's not referring to its retrieval abilities. It's about its visibility on the web. And as I'll discuss, I think that's really, really critical. Okay. So here I just have to... All right, so what did I find? This is a big one, but I just want to say quickly, I actually found very few genuine web portals on the web, and I did not find any in French. I found a handful in English that fit the parameters of the scope of my little scan. There were no French portals. Most portals found and reviewed originated from hospitals and governmental agencies, which suggests that they are reliable. One was commercial. However, with exception of kidshealth.org, they were hard to find. And hard for me. I've been a librarian since 1982. I got my Master of Library Science there. I mean, I'm an expert searcher, you know, and they were hard for me to find. So this first one, Teen Health. Teen's Health is from Nemours Foundation. If I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, I apologize. It's very prominent on the web, so its findability is high. It's part of a larger website. This teen section is part of, actually, the real portal is the big piece where it has a section for kids, teens, and parents. And it's equivalent to a 40-volume encyclopedia. It's huge. And it's almost always on the top five hits when you Google it, if you Google using the words teens health. It had, since 1995, it's been accessed by about 250 million visitors. I don't know if those are teens or not. And on a typical weekday, more than 300,000 people access the general website, the larger one. Okay. So physicians and other health experts review all the content, and it's updated and reviewed every 1 to 3 years. And it has a quite clear editorial policy. Its usability. Well, it follows the basic rules of design. I think it's very good design. It's solid design. But I would call it very conservative design. It's a no-frills approach. Okay? It's no-frills. It's good. There's frames, the menu always stays there, the titles always stay framed in the window, and the information in the middle changes. There's a lot of white space. Most of the information is above the fold, which is what you look for. It's a pretty clean, uncluttered look. No pop-ups, limited use of movement. It has multiple ways to find information, which, for instance, search, browse frequently asked questions and tabs that come up along the other side. And this from research with children is appropriate, especially browsing, because there's big cognitive load for kids and they're trying to mentally map all the information. And the more you can structure the information through browsing, the better it is. They use a very simple search using the Boolean AND, which means it's a very uncomplex search. And the readability is, I think the U.S. government has plain writing guidelines for everything. Sorry, it's not the U.S. government. The U.S. government has put out these guidelines. This is not the United States government, but many organizations follow that. Okay. Okay, so I'm sorry, this interactivity is very low. And we're talking about Web 2.0 today, so this is really not a Web 2.0 product. It has seems to be a very limited mission, and that's to provide documentation. And it's not there to help users construct an understanding of that documentation. Multimodal ways of learning are not addressed in this. It's a textual tool. In the teen section, there's no multimedia, although the site for the younger kids does have movies. There's no learning tools, no education games, and it's one-directional communication. There is some ability to email somebody through this site, but it says clearly it will not be personally answered. Okay, so it's a very controlled environment for kids. That's the bottom of it. You can see you can ask experts. If you were to click on that, you would be able to email, but you probably wouldn't get an answer. Girlshealth.gov is it's a fun site for girls, and it's to promote healthy, positive behaviors in girls between the ages of 10 to 16. So it's kind of that early adolescence. It's quite usable. I really like it. It's user-centered in the sense that while I was using it, a user survey popped up. And when you search the site, you'll see that there's an advisory board that includes girls. There's teens. And that's really the hallmark of a very user-centered website, is when you include users, ongoing, and there's user studies throughout. And you're upfront about it. It has a lot of fun use of imagery, lively look, a consistent menu. And one thing they had is an alphabetical search, you see here, from A to Z. And in research that we did in Montreal, we found that we were working with kids in 11 and 12, and they really liked alphabetical searching. So sites that have that for young people are very helpful. It's a real cognitive support for them. It's interactive. Somewhat Web 2.0, but there is a lot of interaction going on. There's a section called Speak Up, where you send your comments in to a topic. You can take a quiz on health information. You can vote, a la American Idol, on different questions of the week. The question this week was, do you like school? And there's user-created content. There's articles written for girls by girls. But all the content that the kids send in is vetted. It's not like there's no wiki or blog there where it goes and you see it. There's like this mid-step where somebody is behind the scenes checking it out. Okay. So reliability, I would say it is reliable, it comes from the U.S. government. However, it doesn't say anywhere whether there's a medical advisory board. It says there's a staff of two people running it behind the scenes. And it does say that some of the news stories and featured articles come from us, from Kids Health, the site that I just showed you. A lot of people, a lot of hospitals and whatnot are actually subscribing to Kids Health. And this site is also subscribing. So that means there's a bit of duplication and cross-pollination of information there. Findability. They claim their site ranks number one when searching under the words girls health. But that's girls, plural girls, with the apostrophe after the S. And, you know, a lot of kids don't do that. And when I searched under, say, teens health, it just never showed up in any of the searches that I found. Okay. This one I'm going to go quickly through. I'm not going to talk a lot about this. This is among the four most linked sites to public from public libraries. There was a study done recently. Somebody went and looked at all public library sites, not all, the larger cities in the United States and their teen sites, which kids use quite heavily, library sites. And they had a section on health. This is the fourth most linked to site from public libraries. And it's a commercial site. And I really have questions about it. It's, you know, querying users for advertising. It doesn't seem to be updated. The whole kit and caboodle, I won't go into that much more. Now, this is an interesting one that I really liked. This is from Great Ormond Street Hospital in London. And you go into it, and here's the teen section. Okay, in this highly usable, many, many ways to explore and discover, and that's really important with young people, lots of options. They offer search, which searches the, you know, the Google box, the empty box, browse, alphabetical search, one way to explore, podcasting. They have podcasts, they have video, email, lots of visualizations of, say, tests, treatments, an address book for helplines, and it includes a site map. They have access keys for navigating for sight-disabled people. They have some ability with... This is the only site I saw with that considered people with visual impairments. And interesting, this is also very important for young people, spell check, even for teens. This site had when I tested it, it had a spell check, and the other ones didn't, which is really odd when you're putting out a product for young people. You know, it's not sometimes that they don't know how to spell, it's that they type so fast. They make mistakes. Interactivity. Web 2.0 tools included. It allowed users to bookmark and tag the content. Has anybody heard of Delicious? Yeah. Facebook, Dig, Reddit, StumbleUpon. It has this little bar at the bottom where you're allowed to tag it yourself. And that's nice. It has like a kind of a wall. In Facebook, you know the wall where you post your... Okay, it had a wall where you post your views on some question. It was clearly filtered, and again, that intermediation between putting the information in and posting the information out. And it has a message board. There's a section with real stories, but that was a one-way transmission. It was a videotape of kids talking. Podcasts, flash media. So it was a really interactive site. Lots going on, multimedia included. Findability, virtually impossible Googling it or using any search engine. I found it by linking to Toronto Public Library's Ramp for Teens. There's a section in there for teens. And surprisingly, they had a link to that, but they did not link to the sick kids. I thought that was quite interesting. And, okay, just to kind of wrap up, there are sites that are what I call borderline adolescent. This is a pretty good effort from SickKids about kids' health. Now, this is actually for children up to 12. But you can see right in the middle there, there's a little piece about puberty. So this right here. So, you know, it's the borderline of early adolescence. And to contrast that, this is the little story they tell about the monsters of puberty. And then this is Ask Alice, which is linked to, it's again one of the top four sites that public libraries link to for teens, but it actually is for freshmen at university. It's for those older teens, and it's created by Columbia University. So it's not for the younger set. And that actually raises a question for me about what is adolescence and how do we target it. I don't know, how am I doing for time?
Five more minutes.
5 more minutes in presentation or questions? Oh.
Basically, 2 more minutes.
Okay. So,
we're going to go into discussion.
All right. So, just to wrap up, some things that I found. Limited options. There aren't that many web portals out there. There's a lot of health information. That's no surprise to any of you. but as I said, limited options for actual web portals / digital libraries. So one-stop shopping doesn't really exist to a big extent. Most of them are what I call closed systems. Most of them have created their content, very little linking outside to out to the open web. Also closed in terms of not being very web 2.0. I did not see one blog or wiki, and there's reasons for it, good reasons, but it's to consider. One thing I did want to mention to you, and it's related to this, is the Greater Ormond one. One reason that we might not have a lot of this web 2.0 stuff on web portals for teens, when I was visiting, looking at the Teens First for Health from Great Ormond Street Hospital, as you dig, drill down, you find a little link, and it says something to the effect of for American children or for U.S. users, okay? And it's the wording is this: in the USA, the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, COPPA, protects the personal information of children under the age of 13. This law restricts the information we can collect from children. Therefore, Children First, the one from England, is only for use in the United States of America by individuals who are age 13 and over. It is important for you to understand this law. We encourage you to read more about COPPA. And so, I mean, as they have absolutely no idea who's 13, you know, they can't possibly know. They've just put the disclaimer there. It's a little bit of the Monty Python, you know, wink, wink, say no more kind of thing. Yeah, that's what's going on there. But, you know, it's certain that kids under 13 are going to use sites for teens because really and truly those early adolescents, that's where they're going to find their information, you know. And so that's an issue about collecting privacy, collecting data. That's why the whole issue of social networking and social software might be a problem. For web portals for teens. Age appropriateness. Now, I wondered, early adolescents versus older adolescents, do they search differently? This is a question in my field. We're trying to create developmental models of how different ages look for information. And they do. But we don't know much about it. And, you know, we don't know what their we know what their concerns are, but we don't know how they search based on cognitive development. In my exploration of websites and health information, I explored the youth web portal from France. They have, I don't know what the agency is, but it's youth. And within that, there is health information. It's not a health portal. Now, it subdivides adolescents into two periods. They have they have 11 to 13 or something like that, and then 14 to 24. That's their youth. So, you know, the different notions of youth and what users need. Now, do we need one-stop shopping, one health portal, or should we be thinking more specifically about specific diseases and conditions? Okay, almost finished. Canadian content. Now, I'm from University of Pittsburgh, but I'm a Canadian, so always interested. No French portal. Limited French content in French, but I did not see a French portal. And a lot of the libraries link back to Health Canada, all that stuff, and that's basically a page. There's nothing specifically Canadian, except for what's coming out of SickKids. Users' perspectives. What role do teens play in the design of these portals? Unknown. And what do teens think about them? Maybe they have user studies. They're not published. And findability is a big, big, big problem. Building health portals is a really great idea, but will teens find them? And I think part of the answer to that about findability is about education and teaching teens that there are special places to go for health, reliable health information, and obviously the publicity of these portals. If they, you know, once they're designed, is putting that information out that they are where to be found. Okay, and that's it. Thank you.
This question is from looking from a Canadian standpoint, or?
Okay, no, you're right. It was mostly, when I said, I was under that heading Canadian.
Okay.
Yeah, in Canada, I really did not find a big portal in French for Canadian kids. Yeah. Yes?
I have a question. Did you use a formal mechanism, or how did you assess reliability of the content on the sites?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. It's in my notes, and I didn't read it out. This was not about content. Like, I'm not testing whether the information was reliable. It's very information science oriented, which is about structure, navigating, usability, that kind of interaction.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the reliability factor when, before, did you look at, like, I know you mentioned, like, editorial boards or
yes.
Is that what you used?
That's, okay. The reliability was about the portal, not about specific objects of information. Okay, it's like it's when I come to this portal, do I have a sense that no matter everything in it gives me confidence? The sense of confidence that you get when you enter the doors of that portal. Yeah.
I was interested in your concept of findability.
Yeah.
Surely the whole point of Google's algorithms are
of which algorithm?
Google,
yeah.
And the way in which they decide what comes in the first 10 is which ones are being used. So if you're saying, well, I ignored most of the things that were in Google top 10 and I went off and found proper forwards.
I didn't ignore them, yeah.
But whether you included those that weren't considered portals or coming from reputable organisations?
I looked at a lot. Spent the summer looking at all these things. Yes, I looked at things that were not portals, that were just pages, that were sites, that were, you know, I looked at a lot. Getting back to Google, you know, Google is a popularity contest. And what rises to the top is what's most popular. But, I mean, my viewpoint was maybe there's stuff that is not popular, but is great. So, you know, you have to dig. And there, in our field, there's a stream called knowledge management where we're actually looking at visibility of websites, and that's kind of a marketing tool. You know, people create big websites for their companies, and do people actually find them? So, and there's all kinds of algorithms you can use to do that too, looking at in-linking. Yeah.
Just a quick comment and a question. As someone who's actually trying to get into this field of research involved, we've done some user piloting, and they laugh at the sites that you put up.
Yeah.
It is a big issue when we deal with things like popularity versus reputable information. They're not going there. And leading into that, my question is just sort of a question to you. So what would do you have a sort of sense or a vision of what a reputable web portal would be that still incorporates these ideas of collaboration?
That teens would like.
That teens would go for
it. Yeah.
That's the real question, I think.
Well, let me just step back. I'll tell you a bit about the research I did. There was a big project funded by SHRC, Social Sciences and Humanities Council in Canada, and that was exploring user-centered design, not just user-centered, but participatory design. And the driving question was that, you know, kids don't search for information the same way adults do. So why are adults designing? Because typically in design, you create your product, and then you go out and you kind of test it. But ours was like, what happens if we bring them in from minute one, before it's conceptualized anything? That's what we did over a period of 3 months. And we had two teams, grade three and grade six, and designed these history portals. And they have a different look. And one's called History Trek. You can search it. It's on the web, historytrek.ca. And so now, and we developed a design methodology. We call it bonded design. And we're going to reapply that in health. And so it's the same driving question. If you got teens in from ground up, ground zero, what would it look like? But as a proviso, I would say on the team, you would have to have health professionals because they can't rewrite health information and research, right? Yeah.
I just wanted to make a quick point about the findability. If you look at the Great Ormond Street site, it's obvious why that's not coming up in Google search engines, because it's just one big picture with a few links, which you see how Google works, and it spiders websites, and it lists the keywords that are on the site so that they'll come up. So the designers of that site haven't thought at all about how people are going to find the site, which is very important. And it might look nice, but if people can't find it, it's completely useless.
Right.
But the onus is on the people who are designing the sites rather than following Google. And Google also doesn't rank things by popularity, so it's not based on how many people go to the site. It's based
how many links to.
Well, and also the authority of the links. So if libraries and governments are linking properly, then that kind of site should get to the top. It's just that they're not designed thinking about it.
Right. Findability is a big, big issue.
Maybe it makes sense to direct causes activity not toward teens, but towards their parents. Because I remember myself in teen years, I never thought about health. 99% of the kids don't think about health. Well, maybe as they grow, they think about sexual education.
Mm.
But as they usually say, so maybe their parents would be much more interested in this one.
Yes. That's why many of these sites have a parent section. You're right. And sometimes there's that there's a theory in information science that, you know, about health information seeking generally. There's, I can't remember, blunters, and is anybody familiar with that? There's two kinds of information seekers who look for health information, people who actually avoid it and people who aggressively seek it. So the two kinds of ways to deal with health information, and it's kind of a personality thing. Yeah, people, you know, I have some information for you. I don't want it. And other people, I have some information for you. Oh, yes, this is going to enable me to empower myself and the whole, you know, the whole thing. But some people actually don't want health information. And teens might be the same way. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.